62 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Peter King in Orlando. Speaker Kevin McCarthy keeps trying to push a bill through the House to avoid a government shutdown in 8 days, but his fellow Republicans keep shutting him down. Here's correspondent Jared Hill.
Sources tell CBS News the Biden administration will begin calling the heads of government agencies today to plan for a potential October 1st shutdown.
The resolution is not adopted.
Yesterday on Capitol Hill, a GOP clash in the House after they failed to bring up a defense funding bill for a third time.
The Chicago area auto workers aren't on strike. But they say they're ready to join their counterparts who walked out of three plants a week ago. The United Auto Workers Union says it will expand its strike to more factories if there's not any progress by noon Eastern time. There's a new presidential initiative to try to reduce gun violence. Here's CBS's Linda Kenyon.
The president and vice president will announce the creation of the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention.
The president has said gun violence is an epidemic.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says the president has long supported gun control.
You know, when you hear stats of guns being the number one killer of kids, that is something that we should really be mindful to and do something about that.
Among other things, this new office will work with communities devastated by mass shootings. Linda Kenyon, CBS News, Washington.
He's already serving life without parole for killing his wife and one of his two sons. Now disgraced South Carolina attorney Alec Murdoch has pled guilty to stealing millions of dollars from clients. WCSC-TV's Blair Sobel is in Charleston.
When asked if he was pleading guilty of his own free will, Alec Murdoch responded yes and explained why. Quote, I want to take responsibility. I want my son to see me take responsibility.
A tropical system is expected to be become tropical storm Ophelia, with landfall expected in North Carolina early tomorrow. CBS News meteorologist David Parkinson on the biggest threat.
The storm surge threat, as much as 3 to 5 feet of storm surge. That's going to be in areas near the Outer Banks, perhaps into some of the sounds and bays nearby there.
A new CDC report says America is too fat. Reporter Alexander Tin is on the CBS Health Watch.
47 states this year had more than a quarter of their adult residents reporting they are obese. That means a BMI of at least 30 or more. And 3 states, Louisiana, Oklahoma, and West Virginia, now have at least 40% of their adult residents reporting they are obese.
Before the opening bell, S&P futures are up 11, Dow futures up 17. This is CBS News.
You need to hire fast and hire right? You need Indeed. Their all-in-one hiring platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number 2 ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
The Todd Alba Show.
Two kinds of politicians, those who want to be and those who want to do. Tommy Thompson, John McCain, I would put Tony Evers in this category. They're guys who are running because there were things that they wanted to do.
The Todd Alba Show.
Now contrast that to Hillary Clinton, I would argue, or Donald Trump. Sure, there are things they want to do, but ultimately, they are like Scott Walker. They were people who want to be.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Thank you, Don Rue. Hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is Friday. Friday, September 22nd, and it's another beautiful day to have you here up north. From wherever you're listening, all across the Civic Media Radio Network or on the Civic Media app, podcast, social media, however you got here, you're in the state of Wisconsin sense for the next couple of hours. We will unpack the news in just a bit. Here, let's first tell you what's on tap for this Friday morning. We're going to start with impeachment palooza, because Republicans, no longer content with just talking about impeaching a president at the federal level, impeaching a state Supreme Court justice in Madison, now a few legislative Republicans are passing around a note saying, hey, should we impeach Megan Wolf, the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission? And it's not just a little check yes or no note. It's a 23-page resolution chock full of stuff you would find in a cow pasture about 2020. Because some people, including in the Wisconsin legislature, are still working publicly and proudly to undermine American democracy. Back at the federal level, we'll talk to Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil. He will summarize a week of congressional extremists who are hell-bent on forcing a government shutdown and the pain that that would bring to American families and the economy. In our second hour, we'll talk to Mark Jacob. A typical episode title would be Beat the Press. Because they don't seem to mind. They'll keep booking the same old people no matter how untrustworthy they are. And Mark's new column for Courier Newsroom is called Here's a New Idea for Political Interviews, Ban the Liars. He makes the case that media sites don't mind booking known liars on their airwaves so long as it brings them big ratings. We'll also talk about State Superintendent of Schools Jill Underley firing back at the critics of DEI, that's Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, as part of her annual State of Education speech. And we'll talk to Dan Schumacher about sports. We'll get the forecast from weatherology meteorologist Jennifer Vucicki. And along the way, if you have comments on any of these stories or more, you can reach us at 844-967-2789. You can text that as well. Or you can call or text us through the Civic Media app. Download that, listen to any one of our stations there, and then call or text the show using that app as well. Or just send us a note by email. Email us at radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And if you're watching us on Facebook, you can put a comment on the page or on the Up North News Facebook page, Civic Media Facebook page, a couple of others. You put a comment there, we may see it and put it up on screen as well.
Let's go down to Madison now, where it turns out that Sam Davison has the same bit of, shall we say, fatigue that I have. I stayed up well past my bedtime because Kathleen Madigan was doing a performance at the Pablo Center in Eau Claire last night, one of my very favorite comedians, and she did not disappoint. Sam, you want to top that? You said you were up late, too.
I was up late, but I don't have near the same level of an excuse. I was just up late watching a YouTube series on steam engines. It happens to the best of us.
I'm just going to let that sit for just a minute. Why?
Well, I don't know. Steam engines are just cool. Like, have you ever just like seen an old train and like been, wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty neat right there.
Yep. But at no point did it occur to me that I want to go to IKEA and get the parts for one and try to build it. But is that something you might find curious?
Well, I've never actually been to an IKEA, but if they sold steam engines, then I might to investigate that.
You are missing an experience, my friend. You're going to have to give that a go at some point here. So there was no like special project. I mean, were you just going down the rabbit hole and
pretty much, yeah.
Okay. Well, that I'm familiar with. I've been down the YouTube rabbit hole many a time, and now TikTok finally has me swallowed in because the algorithm kind of figures out what I like to see now. And so, yeah, there's just way too much time.
Sucks going in.
It does. But on the other hand, that's kind of replaced our regular TV because there's just so much, forgive the word in the early morning here, crap that's on TV in so many instances. So why wouldn't you want an algorithm to send you videos that you actually are interested in, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
I guess, yeah. Hey, it's a pleasant morning out there up here on Lake Wissota. It is 60 degrees. Madison is at 65. Waukesha is at 61. La Crosse, 63. Wausau at 55 degrees right now. Wisconsin Rapids coming in at 62. Green Bay is a little chillier this morning at 54. And Hayward is at 51. And again, we get full details of your forecast coming up in just a bit. We have a daily newsletter that you can sign up for. And if you haven't already, head over to upnorthnewswi.com, click newsletter. That'll be in the banner at top of our page. And we've got in there my column on the UAW strike. The striking auto workers are having an impact on Wisconsin already. Even though there's no auto factories here anymore, there are still plenty of factory suppliers. There's a dealer's network and all kinds of people who rely on that. The ripples are wide, but along with the impact, we also need to remember the stakes of this strike and the importance of supporting anytime workers are looking to stand up for extra dignity and an extra piece of the pie, or at least a slightly larger piece, when the employer's piece, roundly tops eight-figure salaries. So we'll unpack more of the news coming up in just a bit, but wherever you're listening from across Wisconsin this morning, when you're here, you're up north, and we'll be right back.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network. Red Delicious, Honey Crisp, Granny Smith. If you have a favorite apple, now is the time to pick tickets straight from the source. Did you know Wisconsin has more than 300 apple orchards? Travel Wisconsin recently naming its favorites, including the Oneida National Apple Orchard outside Green Bay, Ferguson's Orchards in Eau Claire, and Apple Holler south of Racine. Many provide tons of family fun in the fall, too. Tire swings, lawn bowling, hay rides, and more. Apple experts suggest if you want to pick yours fresh, do it before the end of October. For Civic Media, I'm Terry.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
You know the TV show. You know the group is the Rembrandts. I find it hard to believe, but this is the anniversary of the Friends debut on NBC. And when we do this a year from today, we'll be saying, how has it been 30 years since the premiere of Friends? So yeah, 29 years ago today, Friends debuted on NBC with that catchy little tune by the Rembrandts. Well, the Brewers, I mean, we can go ahead and say it now. It would take, you know, a legendary collapse. The Brewers' magic number is 2. They're going to win the division crown. They're going to win the National League Central Division, and it could happen formally as early as tonight. Victor Caratini hit a 3-run homer in St. Louis yesterday afternoon. Blake Perkins added a solo shot, and the Brewers beat up on the poor, hapless Cardinals 6-0 to take, I think, 3 out of 4 games in that series. I mean, the Cardinals, it's not like they win the World Series every year. They don't, but they're usually so consistent. They are 20 games behind the Brewers in the standings, and this is going to be their first losing season since 2007. I'm not sad about it. It's just rather noteworthy. So let's see. The Brewers could wrap things up with a magic number of 2 if the Cubs lose this afternoon, and then if the Brewers beat Miami tonight, and then it would all be done. Corbin Burns is on the mound tonight down in Miami for the Brewers. And then the Brewers finish off the regular season next week with a homestand, first against St. Louis again, 3 against St. Louis, and then 3 next weekend against the Chicago Cubs, which we thought was going to have a lot more drama. It won't for the Brewers. It might still have for the Cubs. That National League wild card race, last I checked, is still very close. And so the Cubs may still be playing for a playoff berth, and then it would be quite likely that the Cubs and Brewers would face off in the postseason first round in the wild card round. So, you know, that series next weekend is still not for nothing, even if the Brewers captured the division over the weekend here. If you're in the Fox Valley, catch the Brewers on Oshkosh Air Support 98.3 and 1100 AM. Or in the Richland Center area, catch us on WRCE News from the Center, 107.7 FM, 1450 AM. The Packers home opener is coming up on Sunday at noon against the New Orleans Saints. Now, this next thing is going to be a little odd to note. Badger football this weekend is actually tonight. The Badger football team is at Purdue, a 6 o'clock game on FS1, Fox Sports 1. This will be the first head-to-head matchup between new Big Ten coaches, Luke Fickle, and then Ryan Walters at Purdue. Wisconsin has won 16 games in a row against Purdue, including 9 straight in West Lafayette. Purdue's last win over the Badgers came in 2004. Purdue's last home win over the Badgers was in 1997. The Badgers have a league-best 10 touchdowns on the ground so far on the young season. One more sports note, Badger women's volleyball, again, ranked number 1 in the nation. They are 9-0, and they are at Northwestern tonight. And then they will be home Sunday afternoon at 1 in the Fieldhouse to take on Indiana. All right, let's unpack the news here. The studio line number is 844-967-2789, and I will get to the
articles of impeachment, if you will, against Megan Wolf, the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, in a sec here. But I also know Mark from Prairie du Sac is calling in, and I wanted to quick mention one of the other stories we're following, and that would be State Superintendent Jill Underley gave her annual State of Education address. And to her great credit, she has really not shied away from taking on the critics of, you know, DEI programs, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and teaching an accurate version of history, and not shying away from talking about issues related to gender and sexuality and LGBTQ issues and things. And she just has really some great comments here about remembering that Wisconsin students deserve a curriculum which reflects the diversity of the human struggle and progress, and that affirming the lives of Black, Indigenous, and students of color, in saying that they matter, is not just political, it is a statement of fact. And of course, we already know that Robin Voss has tried to block funds for the UW system because they still have DEI programs under there. But again, Jill Underley's remarks were just really welcomed in the Capitol Rotunda yesterday about that. So more about those two stories in a bit. But Mark from Prairie du Sac is with us as well. Mark, want to see what's on your mind. How are you feeling on this Friday?
Oh, I'm feeling just bemused by those two stories you just said. I mean, it just is the venality of these Republicans. It just continues to, I guess I'm not even amazed anymore. And for the DEI issue, it's interesting that on campus, they're always whining about how conservative thought and conservative principles and their whole little conservative ideology is not given enough, notice on campus, that they're not respected enough, they're not recognized enough. Well, what the heck do they think that we're trying to prove, DEI is trying to do? It's trying to include everybody in our community, everybody in the political dialogue. And they just don't seem to grasp that fact. And the fact is that slavery existed in this country. Slavery was evil. Yeah, that prejudice against all these groups still exists in this country. And we got to do something about it. And to recognize the fact, recognize that history actually exists. Each day does not begin anew in terms of we can just wipe away all the evils and the problems in the past and just say, well, we can just go on from here and not recognize that we had any problems in the past. It's just asinine. I mean, I'm probably not being inarticulate there, but I mean, these guys need to grow up.
I think that's a great way to put it. I do. I mean, and I don't disagree with your verbiage at all, because the lessons are there to be learned, or you can stick your fingers in your ears and go la 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 la. But you know, you can do that if you want to do that in your life. But Mark, they've got no business telling students that that's what they've got to do as well.
That's right. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Hey, you bet, Mark. Have a great weekend. Talk to you again soon.
You too.
So on to the Megan Wolf story here. Now, as you'll recall, when we left off on that particular soap opera, Megan Wolf is the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. She has no real power. She's not like a powerful figure. It's the six members of the State Elections Commission who provide the direction, and then she implements it. And she helps coordinate the local elections, because Wisconsin does their elections at the local level. 1,800 clerks in municipalities around the state do a fantastic job of keeping our elections secure and safe and accurate. And Megan Wolf is a nationally recognized leader in that area. But then you bring in the clown show, people who are still bringing up points that have long been disproven or don't even need to be disproven because they're just so ridiculous about the 2020 presidential election. They need to take out their frustration on somebody. And so they take these imaginary problems out on Megan Wolf. To the point where Republicans in the state Senate not that long ago held an imaginary vote on an imaginary resolution to fire Megan Wolf from the Wisconsin Elections Commission. I always use the word imaginary because it's not real. There was no nomination before the Wisconsin State Senate. For that, the Elections Commission would have had to take a vote, and four of its six members, at least four, would have had to vote on it. And that hasn't happened. So there is no nomination before the Senate, but they took this vote pretending to fire her. And of course, State Attorney General Josh Call immediately filed suit. So now it's in court. Megan Wolf continues to do her job. And we thought that's where we were going to leave this. But no, yesterday, five Republican members of the state assembly started passing a note around. And kind of a big note, actually. It's a resolution calling for the impeachment of Megan Wolf as administrator of the Elections Commission. It's a big note because it's 23 pages long. It is chock full of all of the garbage that makes up the 2020 allegations, and they lay it at her feet and say it's her fault. Impeach her. These are the people who are trying to talk about impeaching a state Supreme Court justice who won overwhelmingly by an 11-point margin. They want to just nullify that election because they don't like her politics. They don't like her values. They don't like what she says on the campaign trail. They never had that issue when Republicans and conservatives were running for seats on the state Supreme Court. So now they want to impeach here. They want to impeach the president out in Washington, again, for imaginary reasons, nothing with any kind of evidence whatsoever. You would think that at some point they could read the room. And by reading the room, I say like losing 14 out of the last 17 statewide elections in Wisconsin and figuring out that this strategy isn't working anymore. But they're going to keep at it. And by the way, they're not merely being extreme on the fringe and ineffective when they do this. They're not merely disregarding their regular job duties when they do this. They are doing damage for the future. When you have somebody like Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who may not take any action on this new resolution. He may just let it linger and not assign it to committee or not pull it out of committee onto the floor for a vote. But he still has made noise about Megan Wolf and that how, you know, I think if Megan Wolf stays there, he said on September 14th, it will be even more problematic for people to believe whatever occurs in 2024 is fair. Well, why is that, Speaker Voss? Because you say so? Because that's exactly how it works. When you look at the opinion polls out there and you see the number of people who have doubts about the election, every person in that subset of the poll who has lost faith in the elections has lost faith not because of something real, not because of something that actually happened, but because of the words said, the doubts cast by people like Assembly Speaker Voss, former President Donald Trump, these five members of the Assembly who put this resolution out there. They're the ones talking down democracy, if not trying to undermine it quite explicitly. And so it's these lawmakers, these five, who in my mind deserve to be impeached for essentially for fraud, for taking 23 pages and the waste of taxpayer time and money to put this together, to spread these lies still, and to try to tear down a good public servant in the name of crass party politics. People like State Representative Janelle Branchon, the disgraced former chair of the Assembly Elections Committee, Representative Scott Allen of Waukesha, Representative Elijah Benke of Oconto, Representative Ty Bodden of Hilbert, Representative Chuck Wickers of Muskego. Remember him? We had some fun with him over the summer when he was talking about all the reasons that, you know, women's reproductive health rights should be banned because of misinformation that Dr. Lyerly had to help us knock down point by point by point. Yeah, that's the merry band that may not get far in trying to impeach Megan Wolf, but they are certainly trying to impugn her, and they are certainly trying to impede democracy. And so we do call them out this morning and urge you to do the same and tell them they actually have a job to do and to get back to it. Courier Newsroom National Correspondent Kia Vakil joins us up next, and we'll switch our attention from Madison to Washington, D.C. We'll be back after this. You're up north. And there it is, just to make it official once again. We've got Kia's request in for Tame Impala. The Less I Know the Better is the name of that cut. And I did do enough research to figure out to grab the clean lyrical version of that one. So, you know, we aim to serve, Mr. Vakil.
I appreciate that.
Hey, look, we could fill this entire segment with the back and forth, about whether, you know, the federal government heads towards a shutdown at the end of the month. We're not going to do that. Here's another thing we're not going to do. We're not going to do the Merrick Garland hearing from the other day, because again, we didn't really learn anything. It wasn't, you know, again, there wasn't really much of a point.
Yep.
All I want to get into on this week's happenings on Capitol Hill is if you had any particular highlights or lowlights as you watched Republicans fight amongst themselves over either avoiding or encouraging a government shutdown. What's your takeaway from the week?
I mean, my takeaway from the week is that, I'll put it this way. My girlfriend is a preschool teacher. She works with 2 and 3 year olds. I think they could do a better job running the House than Kevin McCarthy. That is how much of a disaster the House Republican caucus is right now. And I have a little bit of sympathy for Kevin McCarthy, like a fingernail's worth. Because, you know, when you've got people like Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene, and, you know, Matt Rosendale and all these people with really, really outlandish requests, and you only have, what, a 4 or 5 seat majority, you're in a really hard spot. But the answer is not to then give in on every demand to the far right people. The answer is to pursue a bipartisan effort with Democrats. And so my big takeaway is that he continues after 9 months to cave time after time after time to the far right fringes of his caucus, who are really the ones in control.
They really are. But the other point I always make is that he's not far off of that. It wouldn't take much to imagine somebody else was speaker, and he was one of those people. He is that far to the right himself, not quite as far, but he's sure no centrist.
No. And what's, you know, let's say frightening is that you are absolutely 100% right. And yet there's a calculus, you know, among the moderate Republicans and even among some Democrats, which may not be wrong, is that if McCarthy is removed as speaker by Republicans, his replacement will almost certainly be far more extreme, which again is saying something, because Kevin McCarthy's no moderate. But, you know, when Kevin McCarthy's considered the moderate House Speaker, that tells you how far right his caucus has gone. You know, it is run by people who tried to overturn the 2020 election. More than half of that caucus tried to overturn 2020. It is rife with people who want to ban abortion, who want to stop aid to Ukraine, who want to, you know, gut public education, who oppose unions, who want to shut down the government because they don't believe in government. So this is what the party is now. And McCarthy is, you know, pretty much he helped get it here.
He did. And he, like the rest of them, are not able to answer the basic question. What are you guys for? We keep hearing what they're against, but we don't know what they're for. And that was a big thrust of the first half of President Biden's first term, was having a Democratic controlled Congress that put things out as far as what they stand for. We've set the expectations very low for Congress, but it's been very interesting to see recently that the executive branch is still trying to stand for things and make things happen. And so let me set it up by reading a tweet from somebody who says, "Holy cow." And he didn't use the word cow, but go with me. "Holy cow. In just the last couple of days, President Biden announced the creation of an Office of Gun Violence Prevention and an American Climate Corps. These have long been priorities for Gen Z. We've been lobbying for both for years. Joe is listening to Gen Z, and I'm here for it." When you contrast that versus the circus up on Capitol Hill, Gen Z, I think, has a pretty good handle on where they're going. What can you tell us about these moves?
Yeah, so the gun violence announcement, I think, is officially coming. The official announcement will come today on Friday. But you know, we have a sense of what that will be. And that, you know, is not going to change gun policy legally right now, because, you know, obviously Republicans control Congress, but it's a move in the direction of making this a bigger issue, to actually create a federal office solely directed towards this is huge. You know, you can't even really do gun violence research for the last few decades. So to have an office is important. Is it the, you know, is it going to immediately change things? Unfortunately not, because it took decades of loosening gun laws, letting stronger gun safety laws lapse, and frankly, just really changing the culture around gun ownership in this country to get to where we are, where we've had more mass shootings than days this year, and pretty much every year. And on the climate front, that one, I will say, I do think is a huge deal. It is, Biden announced the creation of the American Climate Corps program, which, if you know, will basically train 20,000 young people for jobs, you know, working to install solar panels, restoring wetlands, making homes more energy efficient, fighting wildfires, you know, out west. And obviously that'll create jobs for people. It'll help train them for jobs that are going to open up as a result of the Inflation Reduction Act. And it'll, you know, help prepare us, or, you know, make us as climate resilient as possible as climate change continues to impact, you know, our communities. And that's a huge deal. This has been something activists, a lot of Gen Z voters have been asking for years. And it meets their demands. And that's a big deal.
For my whole life, which is, I can't believe I'm saying this, is only was only 20 years after the end of FDR's presidency. All my life, I have heard people say, we need to bring back the CCC, you know, the Civilian Conservation Corps, in some way, shape, or form. This is not that, but this is the modern day version of something that is in tune with the times and is job focused. This isn't a work relief program like the CCC was, but again, it's saying, here's a problem. Here are young people. How do we connect the dots in the most opportune way? And I dare say this one, you know, could be like the CCC of the future in terms of legacy, if it's executed correctly.
Yeah. And that's a big if. Let's be real here. But I completely agree. You know, we saw in his first 2 years, Biden passed some really impressive legislation with the slimmest of congressional margins. You know, obviously, FDR is the standard bearer if you're a Democrat, but he had massive majorities during the New Deal era. And so he was able to pass things like the CCC with relative ease, comparatively speaking. I don't want to diminish, you know, that it was necessarily easy to go up against corporations back right. then either. Mm-hmm. But that Biden passed these laws and is now creating these programs to help advance, you know, those efforts and create jobs, that's a huge deal. You know, the economy is in a transitional moment. Like, the country is in a transitional moment. It's, you know, what happened with the Industrial Revolution and the Technological Revolution. There's going to be a green jobs revolution, and we need to fight climate change. And anything that helps do both is important.
And again, shows that at least something can get done while Congress is busy spinning its wheels. And one other headline I noted that I feel like should be passed along as well, from the New York Times yesterday: the White House directs agencies to account for climate change in their budgets. The New York Times report says the directive is intended to embed the cost of climate change into all federal agencies, which again only strikes me as prudent. Whether, you know, there's people that want to deny this, but, you know, the floods are still happening, the damage is still being done, the infrastructure is still being reinforced. So why wouldn't you be fiscally responsible in acknowledgement of the times, whatever your philosophy is about Mother Nature? That's just my two cents.
No, it's utterly logical to do that.
Mm-hmm. It does. Okay, let's move over to the former president, who has decided not to take part in the second Republican debate slated for next week in California. He skipped the first one as well, and now he claims he's going to be heading to Michigan, and in part, he wants to talk to or talk at striking auto workers, which strikes me as odd, and it's not exactly drawing a warm welcome, is it?
No. And let's be clear, Donald Trump is planning to visit Detroit. We have heard very few details about this beyond the fact that he's saying he's going to go, that he's saying he's going to talk to some striking auto workers and other union workers. That is all we know. So it is unclear what that means. That could be a bunch of 75-year-old former union workers who, you know, support him, and no one who's currently on strike. We have no idea. What we do know is he is very anti-union. We have a piece live on our Michigan newsroom, gandernewsroom.com, digging into Trump's record on unions. It went up on Thursday afternoon, and it digs into, you know, basically how his stances in the past are at odds with what these workers are striking for. And the UAW president, Sean Fain, has been quite explicit that, you know, they are not interested in what Donald Trump has to say, because he has spent his entire life and career enriching himself and other billionaires. And the UAW has not endorsed President Biden, by the way. This is a union that's fighting for the workers. It is does not really plan on getting involved in the political fight. And that's why they're not welcoming Trump.
Which all makes perfect sense. I mean, look, when Trump even announced that he was going, he was taking shots at Sean Fain, the UAW leader, which is not exactly a way to ingratiate yourself. But you're looking to, again, to drive that wedge, which was the whole secret behind Reaganism. The whole reason that there are union member Reagan Democrats is that he was able to drive a wedge and say, oh, the problem isn't the millionaires and billionaires that are keeping your pay down. Somehow it's the union leaders, which of course you call bosses, who are keeping yep. your wages down. And, you know, too many people bought into that for too long a time, but it definitely feels like that fog is lifting, shall we say.
Yes, but, it is definitely. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, but, you know, to that end, you also noted that in the Gander, our Michigan sister publication, you know, that you guys went and talked to some of the workers who were on the line and how they felt they were being treated by the big three automakers. And so they do not strike me as reluctant strikers, that they do understand where the problem actually lies.
Yeah, no, they are not. Our reporter, Kyle Kaminsky, went to the striking workers outside the Ford plant in Wayne County in Michigan and interviewed over half a dozen striking workers. And they all very much had similar versions of the same story, which is they work. They are not paid enough. They cannot afford the cars they build while their CEOs are making $20 to $30 million a year. That's more than 200, in some cases, more than 300 times what the average worker makes. And that's obscene. I don't care what political party you're from. There's no one in the world who deserves to make $29 million a year while their worker makes, you know, struggles and may have to work a second job to get by. And so that's what these workers are saying. That's what they told our reporter. And that's why they're on strike ultimately.
While we were over there looking at the Gander, one more thing caught my eye. And since you're the national correspondent, you see all these things as well from Michigan. Did Republicans over there really push back on a bill to ban child marriage?
They did. Michigan recently, Governor Gretchen Whitmer recently signed a bill in a law banning child marriage. Earlier in the year when the votes were held on that bill, a handful of Republicans, I want to say it was five of them, voted against the bill. Yes, five Republican representatives in the state house. Some of them said they wanted exceptions because they had family members who had been married as minors, which strikes me as a, you know, that's a whole other conversation that I don't think we have time for. But right. Yes, Republicans voted to keep child marriage legal in Michigan.
Okay. Well, all kinds of news from our sister publication there, and our Courier Newsroom national correspondent is keeping an eye on that. And we'll talk about some of the other states as we go along as well in future visits. Kia, thanks so much. Have a good weekend.
You too, Pat. Take care.
So we talked mostly about Michigan there, and we don't have a Courier Newsroom outlet in Ohio, but I have to mention there that the Ohio Redistricting Commission approved maps that it drew. Ohio is a Republican state by about 8 points or so, which is not bad, but they drew maps that would give themselves 70% of the seats in the Ohio legislature. It's just corruption from top to bottom. It's just having no respect for democracy whatsoever. and we'll just keep trying to defend it as best we can here. We'll do so while taking a break for music and a little history lesson next. You're up north.
The 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is here and ready to help anyone experiencing a suicidal, mental health, or substance use crisis. Call, text, or chat 988 to get connected to a trained Lifeline counselor. 988, here to support you. Sponsored by Wisconsin DHS.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
A little fog possible this morning, otherwise partly cloudy with a sprinkle or two possible at some point early to mid-afternoon. Our high today 78, the wind southeast at 5 to 15. Tonight, partly cloudy in the evening, scattered thunderstorms late tonight, our low 61. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, becoming windy, 78 on Sunday. Scattered showers, isolated thunderstorms with a high near 70. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it is 60.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
You know, there was once a time, especially early in my radio career, where we were, you know, warned not to play Happy Birthday like too often or something, because then we'd have to pay for the licensing of it. Well, it was on this day in 2015 that the Happy Birthday song, the copyright was ruled invalid, and it put the song into the public domain. And so now we play it whenever we want. Like today, for today's crop of birthdays, here's one that's already got me feeling old. You remember the 1980s hit Oh Mickey? That was Toni Basil. She's 80 years old today, but gave us this memorable hit. Now, Toni Basil's gone on to have a very, very noteworthy and worthy career. Beyond being a singer, but primarily as a choreographer, as a dancer, as an actress, as a director. I recall, had to be a couple of years back now, maybe a CBS Sunday Morning Report, all about her very storied career, but behind the scenes. But yet, you know, the American public remembers her in the cheerleader outfit with too much makeup and singing this tune. Toni Basil's 80 years old today. David Coverdale is 72 today. He fronted Deep Purple from 1973 to 1976, and then he formed his own little band called Whitesnake in 1978. At the complete opposite end of the musical spectrum from Whitesnake would be Debbie Boone, who is 67 today. Debbie Boone is 67 today, born this day in 1956, to her father Pat Boone, the legendary singer of the 1950s, the crooner, who himself is still with us at the age of 89. If you are too young to remember when this song was a hit in 1977, I don't know how quite to explain it because, I mean, obviously songs go to number one all the time, but some songs are just everywhere. And that was 1977 with this song, You Light Up My Life, which is a very pretty song. There's nothing wrong with the song. It just says something that between that and, you know, disco tunes, there wasn't much else. And so this song, Debbie Boone, 67. Andrea Bocelli, the Italian singer-songwriter, he is 65 today. You know who else turned 65? Who is a senior citizen today? Joan Jett, who gave us this classic. Here's the story behind this song, I Love Rock and Roll. She had joined the music scene as a guitarist for an all-girl punk band called The Runaways, and then that later became Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. And they cut a debut album. It was turned down by the first 23 record labels that it was offered to. This was one of the songs on there. And all these other record labels said, no, thank you. And one took a chance on her. And this went to number two on the charts, but again, is gonna live forever. And we'll hear more from Joan Jett later in the program. On this day in 1975, Sarah Jane Moore. Again, you have to really know your 1970s to remember that she and Squeaky Fromm were one of two different women who tried to assassinate President Gerald Ford in 1975. Sarah Jane Moore's attempt was foiled by the Secret Service. On this day in 2018, Paul Simon closed out his farewell tour with a show in his hometown of Queens, New York. So Paul Simon still does the occasional one-off live show. He's 81 years old now. But in 2018, he said he was done doing, you know, organized tours of cities all around the country and wrapped that up on this day in 2018. Well, this one didn't exactly get on the charts, but this next song, again, was all over the place in 2003, but for all the wrong reasons. Do you remember the name William Hung? This was during the third season of American Idol. This was his audition.
Yeah, baby. She bangs, she bangs. Oh, baby, when she moves, she moves. I go crazy because she looks like a fluff, but she stings like a bee, like every girl in history.
Yeah, look, you would have thought that's it. Yeah, it's a little laugh track. How many of these have you seen on American Idol over the years? But there was just something so cringeworthy about that one that it got played, mostly as a drop-in, but, you know, for the longest of times. And as we mentioned earlier, the Friends debut was this day in 1994. On the text line here from one of our listeners in Waukesha wants to bring up the point from some of our political discussions earlier. Says, good morning. I hear the reference that everyone in their 70s is probably a Republican. I am not, and I'm so tired of that reference. I would like an apology. Well, you're not going to get an apology. You're going to get a gold star. You're going to get a pat on the back. You're going to get an attaboy or an attagirl because, yes, there are a lot of people, you know, older who are Republicans. That's just a fact of life. But the fact is there's still plenty of other people who aren't that way. It's kind of like Waukesha. Everybody thinks Waukesha is, you know, the center of Republicanism. And while it may be, it may have a lot of Republican votes, it's also the third largest county for Democratic votes in the state. And that's why Democrats are so active in Waukesha County as well. So it is an overgeneralization of, you know, people in that age group. But I will say, and you're very welcome for texting that. Thank you just now. But I will say that from a generational standpoint, I have commented, and again, the generational lines, they're not fixed. You know, we say baby boomer and Gen X, and you got your millennials and your Gen Zs. Just to say that, again, what I'm seeing from Gen Z, which would be people up to their early to mid-30s at this point, are just tremendous. I have so much faith in them. I was asked again last night when I was out to dinner ahead of the Kathleen Madigan show, asked again if I'm going to run for office at some point. And the answer was again, no, that I feel like that was something I wanted to do. I was called to do at that point, but that I just, you know, I don't pursue that as much as I want to pursue helping other people and helping spread the same messages that I was spreading as a candidate back in the day, but also because what I'm seeing out of young candidates is especially heartwarming. And I don't want to be accused of what, frankly, we got from some baby boomers and pre-baby boomers who would not move on to other things. I mean, Dianne Feinstein is still up there. Nancy Pelosi's running for re-election. Mitch McConnell, for goodness sakes. Those and more districts are places where the young progressive leaders there had to find some other outlet. And so, yeah, whether it's by age group, by generation, by geography, we don't mean to overgeneralize. And we should just, you know, make clear that wherever you are, if you're standing on your values that seem to be on the right side of things, not right politically, but right, like being good to one another, it doesn't matter your age or your zip code. We salute you and we're thankful that you're listening here. More in our next hour. You're up north.
Exergen thermometers are proven to be more accurate than non-contact thermometers. With children back at school, keeping them healthy is important. Clinical studies have proven that non-contact thermometers are inaccurate and can miss fevers. Accuracy matters. That's why the Exergen thermometer is trusted and used by medical professionals. Exergen thermometers are available at Walgreens and other participating retailers. Choose a trusted and accurate thermometer for personal use. Learn more about why accuracy matters at Exergen.com.
More than 80 million Americans depend on AM radio each month for news, weather, and emergency information. A new bill in Congress would make sure AM radio remains in cars. Because when cell and internet services are down, this free service could be your only lifeline. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.